Now let me read chapter 2, verse 1. And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep went from him. Now, this man Nebuchadnezzar, I'm confident, as he had been lifted and exalted to a very high position, that he had wondered about this great empire that had come now into existence under his leadership. Actually, it was the first great world empire. You see, Nebuchadnezzar actually had done something that the Egyptians had not been able to do. After all, Egypt was self-contained, and the biggest mistake any pharaoh ever meant was to leave the Nile River. He just stayed there. He's absolutely well protected. He had a wall around him that nobody could breach, and that was the desert. And only one entrance, and that was to come in through the river. And all he had to do was just guard that. But they began to reach out. But they never did become what you'd call a world empire, although they influenced the world as probably no group of people have ever influenced the world. And this man Nebuchadnezzar was just a petty chieftain, and he began to unite these different tribes. And he took over the Assyrian Empire, then the Syrian, and he's on the march. And he goes down and overcomes the Egyptians. And the Greeks are not able to offer any resistance, although he made no effort to move in that direction, didn't need to at that time, because he's actually ruling the then known world. And this man Nebuchadnezzar, I'm sure he had to think this thing over. And when he did, he found out that he had a world empire on his hand. That's sort of like the old bromide of getting a lion with a tail. You can't hold on. You can't turn loose. And so he's in that position. Now, this man was troubled in his sleep. And he wondered, of course, about the future of that great empire that he had founded. Where was it all going to end? And do you know that after about 2,500 to 3,000 years of human history since then, we're still wondering about it, and a great many people are wondering. Well, this is the answer. Now, we're told in verse 2, then the king commanded to summon the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. He called in all of these wise men. Now, these wise men were the men that had been trained, as we have seen, as Daniel and his friends were being trained. They're still young, you see. But the old boys are called in for this conference. Now, the king says to them, and he summons his cabinet. These men constitute that, and they are made up of men of great intellect and learning. They help to many superstitious and false concepts of a heathen religion. It's true they did. But my friend, I don't know how far we've come today. I know some PhDs who reject the Bible. I think they're heathen and a little superstitious. And isn't it interesting they rule the Bible out of our schools? And then today they're teaching all kinds of astrology and all kinds of superstition, that which has been rejected in the past by civilized people. Strange, isn't it? May I say that don't look down on these brethren, because they're about as smart as your PhDs today or your THDs. Now, these men, they comprise the brain trust of Babylon. And they are brought in before the king to hear his unique command. Now notice, the king said unto them, I've dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Now he explains to them he's had an unusual dream, which he believes to have some far-reaching significance. You see, God made it clear to him that he had something to say, but this man in his darkness, all he knew was this was important. Now, to make sure that these wise men have the correct interpretation, he does not tell the dream. They're going to have to supply the facts of the dream before he'll listen to their interpretation.